Blog Talk Radio.
You brought too many.
We'll be right back.
Wednesday evening, May 8th, show number 127. Welcome to another edition of Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is good to have you in the house. Thanks and stuff and things on the menu tonight, y'all, as spring seems to be getting into some sort of rhythm. We're going to be talking about a different type of rhythm later on in the show, but as always, Soul Tree Radio in the Raw, sponsored by the Black Athlete Sports Network, Roland Rogers in loving memory, our friends and colleagues at WCLM 1450 in Richmond, Virginia, the soul of Richmond, the group of sports talk there, Cowboy Reggie and company doing work, as always, down south, S-O-U-F, our friends at WUFO 1080 AM in Buffalo, New York, the mix, the mighty Oba, Pat Freeman and company up there, working hard to try to fight the political machine up in Western New York to make sure that the new proposed stadium goes into the Inner Harbor where it can do all Buffalonians some good and not just a handful of old gangsters. And to our colleagues at Guardian Caps, Leonard Hansen, Mike Feely, as always, looking out for safety for athletes young and old. And most importantly, you guys. I want to also throw in some love to our friend and colleague Anthony Johnson, who's on every Thursday night from 9 to 10. Anthony trying to do his best to make some headway here to get folks to stop knocking their heads up and think. And that's hopefully what we're going to have a chance to do. Normally, we were at 9 o'clock. We had a couple of extra things that had to be done prior to, since we were having major gremlins the last couple of weeks. We tried to ensure that things were going to be taken care of, so that's why the late start. We apologize for any inconvenience, but as we say that, it is time to do work. On the menu tonight, y'all, as the staff of chefs will be coming in to serve up food for thought in and out. On turntable one, we're going to discuss a specific incident, but it's under the subheading of bullying. You know, for the longest time, especially now in recent months, the issue of bullying has become paramount across the board. Gender, ethnic group, doesn't matter. We've seen it. We've seen where bullying through use of physical force or of mental torture regarding a young lady who was sexually molested or another one who was raped, and as if that wasn't bad enough, she was pushed to the brink and committed suicide because they put all her business out in public in cyberspace. Now, we always know there's different types of bullying, but we know there's only one type of bully. And those are cowards who only try to use their supposed control when they're either numbers favoring them or if they're physically bigger. And as somebody who's been fighting bullies for a long time, it can be an arduous undertaking sometimes, knowing that you're going to school or you're going to work or whatever the situation may be, social situations where you got peer pressure. The bullies are never going to go away. How you fight back against the bullies is the issue. And that's one thing that we're going to talk about as an incident in Fremont, California, has brought this bullying subplot to full boil. And as we have a guest, as my sister Rhonda Rhonda Harper from One Love Radio, Miss Queen Extreme herself is in the house on this. She will pick up the point on this, and we will discuss this hopefully with one of the parents of one of the people who was involved in this bullying incident in Fremont. In addition to that, we're going to chop up some other stories. We're going to talk about some NBA and NHL post-trip basketball and hockey stuff, and as well as we're going to pick up on a track team who set a record and then was barred from district championships because somebody raised up a finger in celebration. This speaks to a bigger issue that started last year regarding people graduating. In at least three incidents, one, I believe, in Ohio and Cincinnati, another one in the South, I believe in South Carolina. South Carolina is at least a two-drink conversation after that asshole got back in into elected office after everything he did. But what happened was, as the kids were going up, now they've graduated. They're getting their diplomas. You know, everybody should be happy. They've earned, you know, whatever they did. They've overcame something. They've achieved. And apparently one parent clapped too loudly. I mean, too loudly. I've never heard a parent clap too loudly for their child. Long story short, they were led out of the auditorium in handcuffs. Now think about that. You know, this is the worst kind of situation, because you're thinking, what could go wrong on this day? My baby's graduating. You know, she's happy. He's happy. I'm proud of them. You know, they've appeared, and they're ready to do what they need to do at the next level, whether it's to go to college or get that first big job. And you've got school officials taking them out in handcuffs. Now, we know if you're struggling, those few moments of joy that you do get, you want to cherish them or you want to maximize them. How can anyone justify taking out a parent in handcuffs? Not because they were rowdy. They're cheering for their child. And this sort of stuff smacks of the bullying that we're talking about. How can you temper someone's celebration at a moment like that? It's almost as if they're implying, and I want to see if my sister Rhonda will come in and help me out on this one. It's almost as if they're implying that, well, even in your moments of joy, we want to remind you that you need to stay under our thumb or our foot or whatever, because those moments of celebration will be too few and far between. And when you celebrate, you better celebrate the way we want you to. So be all quiet and reserved and all of that. And, you know, if you're quiet and reserved, God bless you. That's how you're going to celebrate anyway. But if you know that your child has achieved to the level that they have, where they're actually going to graduate and they're at a point where it means something, and you're going to try to stifle that, there's something very wrong with that. Into the mix, I'm going to see if it's not just me and ask my colleague Rhonda Harper about this as well. First of all, Rhonda, who is the CEO of One Love, good evening, Rhonda.
Good evening, Mike. Thanks for having me on. You know I love coming over here. I'm just listening to this right now. It reminds me of when I graduated in 2005, and I remember them saying to the audience members, you know, don't clap until we're all done. And I don't know one family in that audience that actually waited until the actual end of the, you know, commemoration, just stifled it. I mean, even when they asked me, you know, what name I wanted to give out, and I said, you know, Rocky, that's the name my dad gave me. And they were like, are you sure you wanted to say that? I said, yeah, my name is Rhonda Rochelle Rocky Harper. So say it as such. And she just gave me the weirdest look, and then she did. And as soon as she did that, the entire audience blew up, because that's who I was. You can't take away somebody else's celebration. My family was going to act the fool regardless. They saw me walk across the stage, and they was excited. And that's the whole journey. That's the journey. The journey is the celebration at the end. Everybody knows that. We work really hard. Like me, I'm a lifelong student. We work really hard to get to the end of said degree or said diploma. And then, of course, our family who supported us throughout this entire experience is going to want to celebrate with you. Now, trying to, you know, control that environment or even punish somebody for it, it's just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of.
To that that you just said, it was ratcheted up even further in Cincinnati, Ohio, when a young man who was graduating, like you said, everybody's there, and Professor Fred is in the mix as well. But a young man who was graduating school, was a popular guy in school, member of the football team and all that, but he was graduating, good grades and all that nonsense. He's being cheered as he's going up to get his diploma. Just like you said, they're telling everybody don't employ until the end and all of that, but of course, some people are cheering. He was an important kid as far as their success in the team, they withheld his diploma. Now, not only did they withhold his diploma, not because he had failing grades, not because he was missing a subject, they withheld his diploma, and you love this, they wanted to make him serve 20 hours of community service to work to get his diploma. I shit you not.
Okay,
now get
this. What crime was committed?
That's exactly it. See, that brings us to the cruxes. This is bullying in my mind. How are you going to take somebody who's achieved? You know, they've already accomplished everything that they needed to in the curriculum, and in some cases, and then some. This is their moment. This is not the moment for the officials to try to piss on their joy by clamping down on them. This is the time where you're supposed to allow for some leeway, license, levity, whatever the hell it is. It's supposed to be a joyous occasion, not this stay in line, you know, we're going to give you this and don't say anything until we're done. And then even when we're done, don't say anything. And into that spirit, I got to throw the professor in. And professor, first of all, good evening. But secondly, when you hear something like this, I mean, what the hell is wrong with people? You're really trying to stifle a young person before they even get to grow by reminding them that, you know, it ain't done yet. And we're reminding you exactly what you are, because you better do exactly what you're told.
Well, good evening to all.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to live in one of those esteemed counties where it's so bad now that when the name is called, the people cheer and just get up and walk out. There's more disturbance in the stands from the police officers. In our cases, mostly sheriff's deputies are on duty because we have all the schools belong to the county here.
Okay.
So when you get security at graduation duty, that means in all likelihood the persons doing the duty are sheriff's deputies. Being from a family of educators, I have some measure of understanding what's trying to be conveyed here. But that only goes so far. After that point, personally speaking, I think we have educators who are hooked on stupid.
Yeah.
And it's beyond me how or from which they get the power to declare. Think about it now. You got the power to withhold this young man's diploma.
Yep.
But realistically, you don't have the power to tell him to sit down and shut the hell up in class.
Exactly.
So this tells me that there are bigger issues out there with the instructors, with, you know, just the whole system. And it's really wrong because, I mean, that's, you know, you're an athlete.
Yep.
You know the nigga rule about football.
Yep.
At the college level. You can't cheer.
Yep.
You you score the winning touchdown, you're going to get a flag because.
That's right.
You pour off the sideline onto the field. It's utter nonsense, and it's just, and this is something that seemingly realistically,
yep.
is another one of those Negro rules, because now most of you all are probably not old enough, but I remember I was a marshal at the last graduating class from high school that I attended before I moved to where I am now. When we were in the eighth grade, which was one section of the school, you got in line, and you basically marched into the beat of the music. Everybody was in step.
Yep.
You know, when you walk like that, you kind of rock back and forth. That's kind of how you know you're in step.
So
that's what I came up with. You know, I think sometimes the recipients have somewhat trivialized it, and it's unfortunate. But at the same time, though, you know, we're looking. I mean, remember when the Huxley went to Theo's graduation and it was like, School of Education, stand up, put the chapels down.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, because even when my son graduated, his, you know, real graduation, I think, was Friday night.
Okay.
But the schools had their own ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
Because Saturday, with 20, 30, 40,000 people in the stands, in the stadium, and probably 6 or 7,000 or 8,000 graduates.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't calling all them names. But I think, but you know, it's you call it bullying. I just call it control issues.
Well,
either way you look at it, this is a sad situation because, you know, even to some other things that occurred because I remember a couple of years ago, a young man made a statement about something. This was at the college level, and they prevented him from marching.
Jeez.
And this was at an HBCU that's in Raleigh. Obviously, they're very good in track. Because I'm working on a contract with them at any rate.
Right.
You know, it's really, I mean, I think sometimes we can go overboard with some things.
No kidding.
And you know, you're a person who has done PA announcing and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, there are ways that you can rectify that.
Sure.
You know, read slower. You know, you do the pregnant pauses and all those kind of things. But just, you know, have you ever noticed in these situations, typically the kids and the families they go after are not big, you know, they're not the power brokers. They're those middle of the road kind of folks.
Yeah.
And they're not the badasses who this kid might shoot the cop coming up trying to throw them out. No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like the cops who beat up citizens.
Mm-hmm.
They don't beat up those guys who can shoot them.
Maybe, for sure.
You know, maybe it's just a coincidence. But you start noticing this pattern. The pattern of the ones they go after are the ones they deem to be either helpless.
Mm-hmm.
Or not the ones who can truly do battle with them.
Yeah. It makes sense, but
question,
you know.
And my question is always, okay, so you throw them out or whatever you do, what have you truly gained?
But that's my point. You're creating an atmosphere of apprehension. This is a time where you've got young people who've achieved, and they're not the thugs that you saw that we're talking about. You know, they're not the criminals and all the wannabes and all of that. They've achieved. And this is their day to get their pat on the back. And that pat on the back shouldn't be followed by the clacking of handcuffs on a parent. You know, let alone, you know, people being ushered out because their joy has been stolen on a day that really matters to them. I mean, graduation being solemn. Now, there may be a moment of sadness because, you know, one door is closing. You know, you don't have to do this going to school anymore for whatever, for the high school. But, you know, as one's closing, one's supposed to be opening. And that's why it's supposed to be a time of rejoicing. And to have that kind of pallor over a ceremony that's supposed to be great, it troubles me greatly. And as I say that into the mix, I'm going to throw in Cowboy Reggie into the fray and see what he comes up with. So, Cowboy, first of all, good evening.
Hey, it's always a pleasure to be on Soul Train Nation. And good evening to the panel just checking in. So, I'm a little behind on what's going on. It's like Tony Romo at quarterback in Dallas, but I digress.
Well, you're consistent with that. Well, what we're talking about, sadly, is bullying. But we went off on a side forward that regarding how when people are graduating, you know, it's supposed to be a happy moment, but when you see parents being let out in handcuffs because they graduate they cheer too loud or all that. Now, Fred just said this is kind of prevalent in his county where he is. Is it the same way in Virginia, or have they gotten that far with this kind of anal behavior with this?
Well, in all honesty, I haven't seen it yet, but, mm-hmm. you know, unfortunately, what happens in North Carolina, Virginia's a lapdog, so they wouldn't, you know, be too far behind. But, you know, I blame those people for not going to the PTA meeting, I mean mm-hmm. the parents, because the bottom line is a lot of things you can find out if you just will participate.
Sure. It would make sense that parents would likely have a hand in saying, you know, in terms of the celebration, this is what we'll do and all of that. And I'm really going off on this a little longer than I wanted to here, but, you know, to get back to the original premise, I can't think of any kind of logical reason, and again, I'm not a logical cat, to think that it would be all right at any time to lead a parent out in handcuffs because they're cheering too loudly for their child's graduation. You know, this isn't the sticking up of a 7-Eleven, you know, a gas station ain't being robbed. You know, this is not high crime. This is supposed to be one of the best times for a whole family. And it almost as if it's a deliberate effort to muffle any kind of aspirations in somebody to remind them that this ceiling is in front of you, and we're going to smack you upside the head to remind you. It doesn't matter how many times you achieve. This is your reminder that what you do and how you do it is important. And not so much important from a standpoint of this is how you need to live. It's more important for we're going to control everything that you say and do, and you better be a good Negro. And if not, here's your reminder what could happen to you, even if you don't do anything at all. I can't think for the life of me that that young lady who saw her mom let out in handcuffs is going to not think about that moment. And who knows, if she's a more sensitive type, she could be having a traumatic experience regarding that, especially since her mother didn't do anything wrong.
Well, Mike, you know.
Mike, like I said, PTA and NC, that's our fault. I'm sorry, but I don't know, I'm going to piss some people off. But when we sit on the sidelines, when people that should run for city council or school board, they can address this. But some of us stand there in our bourgeoisie little social clubs and stand there and say, well, you know, they're little people. We don't need to say nothing about that. And then when the people who could get out there, when they try to run, they don't have the money and resources because, like here in Virginia, I can tell you, the good mayor down here put the fix in. We had several people want to run for school board. But the Democratic machine got in there, and I said, right, Democratic Party got in there in the black area and put who they want. Even Mayor Dwight Jones put his son on the school board, you know. And then we found out that one of the first that was on school board, the superintendent, turned out she didn't have a doctoral degree. And she got busted. Now she has to get off because she didn't have her paper in order. So this is kind of mad. It's not going to speak for Virginia. But we have this BS that goes around like this, and that's why you see that crap. Yeah, I can't speak for North Carolina, but I can speak for Virginia. That when people don't bomb parents, teach conference, bomb PTA, this is a craziness that happens. Just my opinion.
All right, go ahead, Fred.
Well, this is scary, but I'm going to agree with him to a point. Because,
oh Lord.
Think about it. You know,
mm-hmm.
go to your daughter's PTA meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Are the you know, there's several things that, you know, you really need to go. Like I said, I'm from a family of teachers. It's sort of what you do. This is called breathing.
Yeah.
For us. But even if you're not, you go to PTA. I mean, this is truly where all this nonsense could be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's asinine to say these people can't cheer. We're not back in the 40s and 50s where you march in like you were soldiers and this kind of stuff. But, you know, my dad went to PTA meetings when he was so sick he could barely walk.
Mm-hmm.
And he went until he got to the point where he could not walk.
Yeah.
And when he wasn't there, you know, he had friends who went and they told him what was going on. And
exactly. Mm-hmm.
So there was, you know, at least he stayed plugged in. And this is a man with a third grade education now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not talking about the super educated kind of dude, although he married well, he was married to a teacher.
Right.
But, you know, Reggie's right. If you go to a PTA meeting, first and foremost, you see like one of the schools I'm very aware of. That school is about 60% black. Go to PTA meeting, you would never know it.
Mm-hmm.
You would think this is one of the whitest schools in the county.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because black folks don't go to the meetings. Now, you say party,
yep,
ball game, they all up in there.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the other point I was going to make about this school board, the principal, these kind of people, you know, this young man was an athlete.
Yeah.
So, one example, he was an athlete. So, you got no problem. So you're seeing that cheering too loud, maybe when he scored them touchdowns or made them tackles, we shouldn't have been cheering for him. You know, that's off, you know, I know it's off the cuff, but think about it.
Yeah.
You can cheer as loud as you want to for something as nonsensical as a touchdown,
mm-hmm,
or graduating from school. You know, and just a, like I was at graduation some years ago,
mm-hmm,
at one of the school, and had they enforced it at that particular situation,
mm-hmm,
they'd had to clear the building because one person came up. And I even remember my son's graduation because there was this little girl who was on crutches. She had MS or something. Anyway, she was on crutches. And they had told her, instead of taking so long to walk across, up the steps, et cetera, et cetera,
yeah,
that, you know, they were going to bring her diploma down, et cetera. And she said no.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens is a couple of the football players got up when she when it was time for her to go up, she walked up there in line with everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of football players who had already gone through the line, doubled back, and escorted her up, helped her up the steps, et cetera, like gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
And she got a chance to walk across the stage. Now, had they enforced that dumb rule for that, they had to clear the place up because she got a standing ovation. So who,
mm-hmm,
you going to throw out now?
Yeah.
And see, sometimes, you know, you wonder why kids don't want to finish school, this sort of thing. Well, if you've taken all the joy out of going to school, you see, it's not like when with me, I was scared of my dad anyway. So, you know, you going to school is something you just going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And going to school and doing well was just something you were going to do.
Exactly.
But, you know, when you reach the level that some of these kids have reached now, and you think of what, you know, because, I mean, her parents were probably weren't even the loudest ones in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because some people just screamed and yelled. I mean, it was pandemonium for about 5 minutes. And no, they didn't call nobody else's name until that young lady was off the stage and quieted down. And as long as that took, because she walked across the stage by herself, those young men met her at the other side.
Yep. That is
so
intriguing.
So, it gets, you know, some of this stuff has just plain gotten out of hand. And you have to wonder, what is the real agenda behind this? Because, I mean, what real purpose have you served when all you got to do is amp up the mic a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I do agree, sometimes they do get a little again out of hand. But,
exactly,
you know, we're not talking about a touchdown here. We're talking about a kid. And, you know, and we know all these discussions we've had about kids getting killed, kids,
yep,
going to jail. And when you see a young black man walking across the stage with his, and, you know, like in one place I was, the young man was a valedictorian.
Mm-hmm.
And he not only was valedictorian, I think that was the situation when he was valedictorian, he had never missed a day of school.
Exactly.
And in his speech, he talked about, his part of his speech was like telling mama the truth.
Right.
And one of the days, And I can vouch for this. My son tried this several times.
Mm-hmm.
One of the days he went to school, he had a temperature that should have had him in the hospital.
Mm.
And he took a cold shower and all this kind of stuff, which probably should have made it worse. But anyway, this was the extent he went to make it a school. And, you know, and he said that he just, but, you know, beautiful speech. He's gone on and is doing, he's some kind of engineer now, but he's gone on to do very well. And I say, you know, those kinds of things, if we cheered a little more behind stuff like that, you know, maybe, just maybe, we wouldn't have kids so anxious to go out and follow a bunch of fools.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you said that, though, because I think the most important thing that was said in all this discourse was, how are you going to tell them at a football game that, oh, scream your heads off when that touchdown is scored, and it's inconsequential compared to the achievement of finishing a curricula with a diploma, but yet the greater achievement of the diploma must be tempered with a certain level of behavior. Otherwise, there's a penalty of potentially having to have your diploma taken from you, where you must work community service to get it, or having your parents taken out in handcuffs. There's something very wrong about that. And as I say that, I want to get to our first turntable topic. I believe 209, Shantae, is that you? 209, are you there? I've got 209. Are you there? Well, Rhonda, when you get a chance, pop one in. I want to make sure that this subject gets brought up, because earlier on Rhonda's show, One Love Radio, we brought up an issue of a young man who was an athlete at Fremont High School. And some of you may know that Fremont has a reputation for a strong sports teams. And an incident involving bullying was in the mix of that. Apparently, that's not my guest yet, but we are waiting for her to pop in. Hello to Maria. And as we continue in this discourse, I want to sidebar briefly on something else that was said. And I think the ladies in particular might find this intriguing. As this came in as part of our downloads, and the minute I saw it, I started to crack up, because I was like, you got to be kidding me. The clothing chain Abercrombie and Fitch, who you see all the times with these skinny mini women and very, very clean cut models advertising their clothes, has decided that fat people can't wear their clothes. Now, they've said that straight up, because the CEO said that he doesn't want plus-size women in his clothes, which is why he doesn't make a X or a double X or whatever the deal is. So that's not so much the question as, how can we as consumers tolerate, and I'm talking about men and women, tolerate even walking to a store and wanting to fit this image when they're telling you right off the bat, we don't want nothing to do with your dollars, because if your behind is too big, you're not supposed to be getting in our clothes, and you're not supposed to buy our clothes, which rings true to something we touched on earlier when we were talking about Oprah Winfrey and when she got run out of Paris at the Hermès store because they didn't want her black ass in there. Now, if Oprah had any sense, and you think about it, with all her money and all her influence, when that door was slammed in Oprah's face, she could have said, you know what, the hell with y'all. I'm going to get some black and Latino designers, and I'm going to make some shit. And with my power and influence, it's going to be my stuff, and people are going to be clamoring to buy my stuff, just like they sell when I sell them books on the TV show. They're all buying my books. They're going to buy my stuff. I've had it. I'm tired of having people slam doors in my face. She could have did all of that, and she chose not to do it, because even with all her money and influence, for that one moment, Oprah was reminded who she was, and it smacked her in the face. And she never really recovered from it. Because if that had been me, I'd have done something like that, had the money and influence been mine. But with this Abercrombie and Fitch thing, it speaks to a similar issue. They're telling you right from the jump, there's certain things, we don't want you wearing our clothes. And it's not because there aren't black and Latino women who can't get in the clothes. they want you to know it's a certain image that we want to go with our clothes, and you're not considered in them. Now, I know there are companies that do that, but Fred, we talk about the dollar all the time being recirculated in the black community. But I guess even before I go to Fred, Ron, I want to go to you first on that because you're into sports gear and all this other stuff. You've heard what I just said about Abercrombie and Fitch, and how they don't want no big asses in their clothes. So, first of all, how do you react to Abercrombie and Fitch? And why hasn't there been a designer or two who came out? Because he surely has enough behinds to fit in them clothes, because there's a lot more size 14s walking the planet than there are size 5.
Okay, so where do I start? Because here you are. This is my forte. I'm a fashion designer, so I got this one. Abercrombie and Fitch. That's one of them Gap places. So you know what kind of clientele the Gap already has. Second of all, their target market is gay men. So, of course, they don't want a plus-size woman, unless she's a drag queen, in their clothes. I don't know if you noticed that, but there are big, huge, naked signs of men on the outside of Abercrombie & Fitch. And if you see one girl, she's going to be hiding under a dude's pectorial. Y'all better check that out. Y'all better check it out. There is a specific target market for Abercrombie & Fitch. Just like Tommy Hilfiger.
Wow.
This is no different than Tommy Hilfiger coming out and saying he didn't want black folks to wear his clothes.
Yeah, I remember that.
Or Liz Claiborne saying
that
she didn't want black folks to wear her clothes. I mean, this is just, you know, this is one of those things that just happens in the rotation of target marketing. And every once in a while, a designer or a company or a CEO or somebody in the non-fashion world will open their mouth and ruin the brand because they don't understand who they're dealing with. Now,
well, this
is going to
be Rhonda. This wasn't just a designer.
What
this
about
RuPaul?
Can he wear them?
Well, hold on, Reggie. This wasn't just the designer who said this. This was the CEO who said it. That's right. It's a whole other animal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Because if you think about it, Tommy Hilfiger was the CEO of his company. It's who they want as a brand, who they want their target market to be. Now, I'm going to just put this out there for Abercrombie and Fitch. Y'all had made a shirt about 6 years ago that said, Your daughter is safe with me. Well, guess who's wearing that shirt right now? A plus-size woman, because that's one of my favorite shirts. Now, how about that?
That's my girl.
Anybody got time for that? They always do it. Somebody is always going to come out. It was kind of like, you know, when Cristal came out and said they didn't want Jay-Z and them to be holding them the bottles in their videos.
Yeah,
and they
I remember
doing
that
it
nonsense.
And look at the sales at Cristal. I mean, it happens across the board. You're going to piss somebody off by saying something ignorant. And it's all part of trying to rebrand yourself, but you, as a CEO, you don't necessarily know what brand loyalty is. Of course, there's some plus-size girls up in there. I know them.
Well, see, now, but see, having said that, as I shift to Fred on this, Fred, you know, that sounds even more of an insult to me than what we first talked about with the graduation here. You know, they're telling you to your face, we don't want you buying our stuff. And I know from being in the business, there are a list of companies that specifically say we will not market to black people. We don't want to even have them thinking about buying our stuff. So when you hear stuff like this, not that you're going to ever buy Abercrombie and Fitch, but if your kids or your grandkids started talking about that stuff, would that make you back up and say, no, baby, I'm going to get you something else, and this is why?
Well, yeah, I would go that far. Because, see, I'm so anti whatever it is that I have this. I mean, I have this rule for almost anybody, really. Mm-hmm. I will buy you a shirt and put your name on it. Mm-hmm. I'm not buying you a shirt with Emmett Smith when you can't walk into a bubble gum. I'm not buying you a Carolina, a Duke shirt, and I have Carolina and Duke graduates in my family. Mm-hmm. But I'm not buying you a Carolina and Duke shirt when your grades are, you know, DOA.
Mm-hmm.
And see, this is the kind, this, you know, we're back to Reggie's point. We got to be more mindful of who we are, what we are, and what we're about, simply because it's easy to solve this. If they don't want my money, trust me,
you ain't gonna get it.
my third grade education daddy said, "Boy, don't never pay nobody to mistreat you."
There you go.
I didn't do it back then, and I most definitely wouldn't do it now, because the dollars that we have now are not worth nearly what those dollars were back then.
Yep, that's true.
And you know, we have to become better consumers. Mm-hmm. We got to start reading stuff. We got to start doing our own due diligence when it comes to looking out for number one, because see, again, the Jews, the first thing Jews learn is take care of your own.
That's true.
Yep.
Part of taking care of your own is not only do I look at, and I think Rhonda's on the line, so, you know,
yep,
I'm going to look at Rhonda and say, well, you're insulting a black woman.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I buy from them? They're insulting black women. Because that's just one step from insulting me, realistically.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I would just refuse. And, you know, there have been times before when various things came up, and like, no. And see, I'm so bad about things like that. I actually walk in the store and pick, you know, I'm not above walking in the store, picking it up, and going to the counter and go, oh, that's right. You don't want my money. Right here.
Right? I just feel like that too.
Yes, sir. Put it right in the face. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, and see, no, I usually, when you do things like that, just so you know, it's legal, but understand that the person at the counter is not your enemy.
True that.
They're just there trying to make a dollar like mm-hmm. you are on your job.
Right.
But now, what you to and see, again, I worked with Sears for 5 years, so I know a little bit about this whole corporate thing.
Mm-hmm.
Get one of the managers to come out. Because, see, the only thing that's going to happen is, see, most of the people on the floor now are not on commission, so you ain't hurting them.
That's right.
Like you once would have.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you want management to understand, hey, you're not going to do this to me, and I'm going to just sit back and take it?
Yeah.
No. I'm gonna let you know up front. You're not gonna insult me. You're not gonna mistreat me and
mm-hmm.
think I'm gonna walk away and take it with a smile. Because,
mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I listened to Willis Reed and Black Magic talk about why he didn't get involved with the protesting and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Same reason. My F and anger management would have rose up.
Yep.
And you know, I'm by those who can, but see, there are ways to fight back with these people because,
yeah.
If nothing else, white folk understand getting hit in their pocketbook.
They do. Yes, they do.
Yeah.
And no doubt, Reggie, we know there's a lot more size 14 asses out there than there are size 5s.
Yeah.
Just on sheer volume, you would think common
yeah.
sense would say there's more designers out there that would design clothes, especially for the curvier women, you'd think they'd have more room to work with here. But not that I'm trying to solve the fashion ills of the world, but I really don't know. Why isn't there more designers? Because there's a bigger market there, and you surely got a lot more potential clients than the skinny minis who you're trying to, you know, shoehorn into some hardcore tourist stuff.
Yeah, but Mike, you remember we had Apple Bottoms. I forgot to, and Rhonda might can help me with this. We had Apple Bottoms. It was a rapper out from St. Louis that
mm-hmm.
went out at Apple Bottoms. And in the beginning, the lady supported, but then it fell off. But you guys remember the Miracle of Boston? And I say that where basically, and just kind of follow me with this. Okay, we have disposable income with people in our community. That as long as it has Tommy Hill or Gucci or whatever, and Rhonda,
mm-hmm.
please back me up on this, you have a segment that's going to care how people urinate and defecate on us. It's a fashion girl. I got to buy it.
That's true.
I mean, we just have that segment
yeah.
in our
mm-hmm.
community, and we might just go ahead and deal with it.
Yep.
I mean, it'd be
yep.
nice if we had disposable dollars where people could be nurtured and understand. I remember
mm-hmm.
when Tavis Scott and Tom Joyner back in the day went after one of the computer companies, and they almost got put off the air. But then ended
mm-hmm.
up that the Mexican guy bought it. But I can tell you a real life story real quick. That,
sure.
That our doctor, my mother goes to, worked on my father's eyes. Now, my HMO that I have, I can go to Pearl Vision or Sears or whatever, JCPenney's, and it's like my copay will be $10. But with the insurance I got, with him will be $50. But with this young man being a black eye doctor and knowing what black people go through, I'm going to pay an extra $40 and give this brother the business, one, because he is taking care of my family. I just found out about it, and I was hooked up with somebody that's already knowing my family. It might cost you $40 more, but sometimes you have to step to the plate and pay a little more to go ahead and patronize our own when they show quality work and rather get the cheap nickel. But, Rhonda, real quick, as I ask Chris, can RuPaul buy those kind of clothes and be okay? Please tell me RuPaul, he or she is or whatever the hell he is. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd be welcome in there.
But then now hold it. That flips this whole thing in a whole other direction. Now it's all right. Now if I'm Michael Jackson, they're gonna give me some love. Even if I'm Reggie Jackson, they're gonna give me some love. But if I'm Junebug Jackson, they ain't gonna give me the time of day. So there is a celebrity thing that goes to this. You know, if a celebrity said, "I'm not down with this Abercrombie and Fitch BS," and what you said was funky, you know, it would matter. But again, you're having people dictate to you, telling you they don't want your stuff. I'm sorry, go ahead, Rhonda.
This ain't the first time for Abercrombie and Fitch. I don't know if y'all noticed this, but Jersey, remember when they had the Jersey Shore and the situation was wearing Abercrombie
that's
and Fitch
right,
on the
that's
show?
That's right, yeah,
and
yeah,
the
yeah.
way he was acting, Abercrombie and Fitch came out then and said they didn't want him wearing it. Because Abercrombie and Fitch has a very serious target market, and they ain't playing. Mm-hmm. They're like the John Galliano of fashion, I swear, at a store level. But John Galliano, he just get drunk and just start talking about Jews and whatever. He don't care. He going to get his millions anyway. And so on this side of the fence, you have these humongous conglomerates that just don't care what they say because they know on the under nobody's paying attention to it. Everybody's still going to, because it's Abercrombie, it's A&F, and you see it everywhere, bootleg and everything. I mean, it's being copied in China, everything. You're going to see it. You're going to keep seeing people purchasing it. They just don't. They don't care. And I'm sure there's some twig out here wearing a size 2 that's like saying the same thing. I don't want to see anybody wearing. I don't want to see a fat girl wearing the same shirt I'm wearing. Well, if a fat girl's getting the same shirt you wear, honey, and you a size 2, I think I'd rather see the 14 than the 2. I'm sorry.
I like beats. Give me beats. I like beats.
Yeah. I want to look through you. I want to look at you. You know what I'm saying? So I get it. But it's a continuous cycle in the fashion industry. It's just like when they came out and they said that every, you know, I don't know if y'all, of course y'all don't know because y'all are in the industry, but every year the women's size, the average women's size goes down, right,
okay,
in Hollywood. So the optimal size for Hollywood is between a 2 and a 4. Okay, you're
get
fat.
Get the hell out of here.
You're doing too much. Yeah, and they tried to change, and then you saw the anorexic models come out, right? The average size of a woman in the United States is a size 12.
Yeah.
They need to get with the program and stop doing this to these teenagers, because what it's doing is, let me tell you something, there's going to be some girl, some plus-size child out there, and I know because I was one, some plus size out that's going to go on some anorexic binge just to fit in Abercrombie and Fitch. Now, let's go back to 1980 when Guess came out. Guess jeans came out. They was liquid tight. I had them. I had to drop all the way down to a size 0 just to get them. I was 86 pounds at 5'5", as a senior in high school.
My God.
That's what we did to get in these clothes, and this is what's happening to young women. Do I have a problem with eating this now? Yeah, it does. It causes effects later on in life. If you try to fit in something, you try to fit into this bubble that everybody tries to put you in, it's going to eventually cause some real serious problems. And if the United States keeps doing this and stupid companies like Abercrombie and Fitch keep opening their mouths, I mean, they don't want the situation. They don't want people that party wearing their clothes. Gay dudes got plenty of places they can shop. It is
that's
not necessarily going to fall on the shoulders of Abercrombie and Fitch. And if they keep doing stuff like that, not only are they going to alienate the community that they're trying to target, but they're going to end up in Target, just like Machino and everybody else that starts out and they piss people off. Where's Liz Claiborne? You can go get Liz Claiborne right now at Target. You can go right now and get Liz Claiborne at Walmart. You used to get Liz Claiborne exclusively at, like, Bergdorf's, Macy's, those kind of
high-end places.
You piss people off, you're going to end up in an outlet, and that's just how it's going to be. Fashion goes too fast.
Mm. Well, let's go past fashion and get into our turntable topic, if you would. Earlier on your show, and if you would please set this up, Rhonda, we were talking to a young woman whose son was an exemplary student, and he got into a situation at Fremont High School. Please elucidate.
Okay, so the woman's name is Shay Franco-Clausen. She's from the Bay Area. She has a partner, so we're talking about this child having two moms, going into one of these exclusive schools, and becomes the subject of not only bullying, but now it's hate crimes and pretty much gay bashing. Because I listened to the video. There's very limited on the actual what you can see, but the audio on it is absolutely perfect. And these kids, these boys from his football team, had started harassing him outside, and I guess it followed into the locker room, and subsequently four boys decided that they wanted to lock the locker room door and commenced to beating this child within an inch of his life. The coaches knew about it. They had, let's see how this works. The coaches knew about it. The kids were put into the locker room, and I guess the son was sat in the bleachers for 3 hours while these people not only cleaned up the blood and all the evidence, but they all got the chance to get their story together. No police were ever called. Boy got out of school at a regular time. He didn't get home. His mom didn't drop him off until 8 o'clock that evening. And by then, he's got a skull fracture because they've hit him in the head with a chair. And you can hear this. You can hear him being called fag. You can hear him, you know, you can hear the boy saying, you know, stop. You can hear the other boy saying, stop, stop. You're going to kill him. You're going to kill him. You can actually hear this on the video. The crime is that he gets an assault charge on him based on the fact that he, once the door was locked, went into this fight or flight,
yep.
And he took his helmet and hit the first one he could. He knew he wasn't getting out of the situation. He took his helmet and he was going to fight his way out of that. They charged him with assault with a deadly weapon.
Jesus.
Yeah, so today, I think it was today or yesterday, he was officially convicted. And now this child, who's not even an adult, he's still a minor, is wearing an ankle bracelet for being bashed, for being a victim of a hate crime, and is being constantly victimized by not only our justice system, and I know because I have black nephews and brothers that have gone through this system down here for either no fault of their own or some fault of somebody else's or somebody's name. It's always something. It's San Jose Police and the Santa Clara, just Santa Clara County alone has problems with their officers and African Americans, given that we are 1% of the population here in the South Bay. So having said that, right now what we're trying to do is get up enough media attention to not only have this case overturned, but have these people brought up on charges, because this is a hate crime. The only reason why they didn't charge them as a hate crime was because there was an two African American males involved in this situation.
They want to run it and say it's black on black crime, but because of his because of the young man's parents, it is a hate crime, and it needs to be brought out that the calls or the interactions between the parent and the coach and some of the school people were taped, and that she has evidence that the coach said when they locked the door it was a hazing, which would make him wrong immediately because hazing would be frowned upon in certain states, and some states is even illegal now. And in addition to that, the fact that the coach mentioned that, well, this is the first winning season we ever had in quite a while. So now you've got that into the mix, which leads to believe that there's reasons to protect the interests of the school, the coach, and others, and to hell with this kid because he's collateral damage. Now, like I said, I haven't heard it yet, but the fact that this is an area that some of us back here on the East Coast, we're thinking, well, wait a minute, you know, San Jose, San Francisco, you know, Santa Clara. I mean, isn't this a more tolerable part of the country because there is strong gay influence out there and that gays do have a say or at least have a stronger political voice in what they want in their everyday life out there? And so why is this crap happening?
You would think, right? But just look at this. We're the ones got stuck with Prop 8. We got San Francisco, the gay capital of the world, right here. And we got Prop 8 right dead on top of it. So you would think that we were more progressive when it came to same-sex couples or same-sex families, but we're not. We're still in the dark ages. I'm figuring we're like 1954 or somewhere around the 60s. We haven't progressed at all. People think we are, but we're not, and especially when it comes to the judicial system. I mean, here, a black man is guilty before he even get arrested. You know what I mean? Like drag queens are getting pulled over out here and stopped and frisked. You know, it's just that bad. It's just that bad, and it's not getting any better.
Well, to the point of the kid himself, you know, Fred, you know, they can label it any way they want, but when you got more than one person trying to whip your ass at one time, that's ganging up on somebody, as we used to say in the old day. That's bullying, you know, and how they could sort that out to even think that this kid is assaulting somebody when he's clearly trying to defend himself. Wow.
Well, you know, first and foremost, the coach should be brought up on charges just for allowing.
Thank you.
Even in the NCAA, you know, this is one of those situations where he'll go get another job, another place, and you know, and this kind of that kind of nonsense. But come on, now we're talking about children here. Now I know that. My son was teased at times by some of his peers because his arm is paralyzed. And, because, I mean, kids can be some mean little bastards.
They can.
So, I mean, but at some point, somebody has to stand up and speak up because, you know, this is lunacy here.
Yep.
This would be almost like FAMU standing up and say, well, we want this young man to be our drum major, so we're going to let them beat the hell out of him.
Exactly.
And obviously, somewhere, I mean, this is, you know, you can call it gay bashing. There's all kind of things you can throw at this. But from what I'm understanding, the young man himself is not gay.
Exactly.
No, he's
No. His parents are. So why would you even attack him for that?
Thank you. You know, but see, this shows what punks they are.
Exactly.
Because they're going to attack the child for some of the parents doing. That's just like back in the day when we used to get attacked because we were black. And, you know, as the joke goes, we weren't there when we were made. So it's not our fault that we black. You know, and I would just love to see him go after my father because he was a nice guy, but he would shoot your ass, too.
See, that's what I'm talking about. You know,
and this is the kind of idiocy that's floating out there. And see, we're talking about giving some of these morons more guns.
Thank you.
We're talking about giving some of these morons more freedoms. Because, you know, they just passed a law here in North Carolina that says, hey, you go on college campus with a concealed weapon now.
Jesus.
Now remember now just before you get it twisted. You know, you go around town, you see all these white boys with the knives hanging out of it, the clip knives.
Yep.
Hanging out of the pocket. Now those are tools. Now, you take that same knife, clip it on a person our color. That's a weapon.
That's a weapon. There you go.
And even though, you see, this is, you know, I can somewhat understand, the thing that King Salt is still ringing in my head with this young man, though, is he must have some really piss poor lawyers.
He
had a district attorney.
It hasn't gotten to that yet. That's the whole point. They're still trying to.
They got a district. Yeah, they're going back to court. He took a plea deal. This is the messed up part about our justice system. They had this boy sign a plea deal without his parents being there and him being under 18. He's a minor. There's no way he should have been able to sign a plea deal for anything.
Exactly.
All kinds of stuff wrong with that. Even they try him as an adult.
That's what they're trying to do. That's what, for the plea deal. That's the angle I'm thinking too, Fred. And that's why the ACLU needs to step in on this, because there's so many kinds of wrong here.
To be nice about it, the ACLU is after television. Mm-hmm. They are worse than anything we ever accused Sharpton. I mean, I've gained a new respect for Reverend Sharpton over the last few years, because I don't see him as almost like an institution like I used to see him and Jesse and a few others.
Yeah.
NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
NAACP.
Right.
Of course. But, you know, among the things, you know, that we're sort of stepping around this, but the reality is, you know, we're back to that whole scenario we talked about some weeks ago called slavery by another name.
Mm-hmm.
Pushing, mm-hmm. And someone has been on, they gave the numbers for what's going on with the various companies that are at the forefront of this move to get all as many black folks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't even have to worry about buying bullets to kill them. They'll do that themselves. But we can do enough of them over here and make money off of them.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see the investor list for some of these prison companies, because I know some of these senators and whatnot got to have anything right in the middle of it.
Yeah,
but
they
see,
do.
This young man has gotten railroaded after getting bullied.
There's no other way to say that. And when you have a situation like that, you've got to have proactive parents, which goes back to where we started and what Reggie brought up. You know, that to the parents' credit, they have been honest in trying to do as much as they can. But
yes,
sometimes you have to have the backup of having a chronology of making sure that, yes, I went to everything that you're trying to tell me I was supposed to go to, so now your argument is shut down. What are you going to do about this? Because that's really what it comes down to. And when we weigh what happened in Steubenville, Ohio, with the young girl who got raped there, and how it was all put out in cyberspace, on public, on social media, and, okay, two kids get caught. Now, supposedly, there's supposed to be more who are going to be looked at because Anonymous is going to bust them. But two kids get caught, and the media says, oh, their lives are ruined. They don't say shit about the girl who was the victim. You know, and there's a similar precedent that might be underfoot here. And why? Because the kid was mad enough, and I'm saying it just like that, because the kid was mad enough to not pay attention to the annoyances of these punks who only jumped on him because they had no recourse left. Because if I'm right, Rhonda, there was one other element that we didn't throw into the mix yet. Did the coach not get this kid to bring him there to this situation so that the room could get locked?
You know, I'm not sure on the specifics of that. I'd have to listen to that tape, because she did put it in all of its full detail today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure, but I know the coach had – the coaches actually were outside of wherever this was going on. The coaches
mm-hmm.
were actually on site. I'm not sure if they put them in there or if they knew they were going in there, or I'm not really sure.
They need to check the school's so-called policy on hazing, because if the coach says he was being hazed and the school endorses hazing, then
right.
not only is the coach's ass belong in jail, the school officials' asses belong in jail.
That's the truth. Here's the conspiracy to cover that up. The cleaning of the blood, the taking the players off into another room so that they can
mm-hmm.
get their stories straight. All of these things, if this was a crime, let's just say this was a regular crime outside of
yep.
school, this would be called accessory. This man
right.
should have been locked up just like they should be locked up.
That locker room's a crime scene. Nothing in that locker room should have been touched, theoretically.
Theoretically. Mm-hmm. Destroying the evidence because the blood was there. I mean, you don't have a kid with his head, you know, busted open, and there's no trace of blood anywhere. You know, they literally had to clean it up before they let this kid go home.
And if the room was locked, Fred, if the room was locked, then how do they have evidence that this kid assaulted any of the three people who was beating on his ass?
Not just that. If the room was locked, that's kidnapping.
That's what I said. I said it was kidnapping. As soon as that door, and you can hear it, lock the door. And as soon as they locked it, you can hear it just go. It went. And whoever had this video, and it turned out that the principal actually was the one that sent the video to the mother. So right there, either you wanted him, you wanted these coaches, you wanted these players to be arrested, you knew there was something wrong with the program, or you just absolutely the dumbest person in the entire world. Because the video is so telling. It's a 4-minute video. And I got into it about 2.5 minutes, and I couldn't take it anymore. I think I was in 2:13, and I was already sweating. I mean, it's so bad, and it's so graphic, and you can hear the chairs. You can hear the beating. You can hear the smacking. You can hear all of it in this video. And then the kid, you know, after it's over, of course, he just turns it off. Now, how that kid got that video to the principal, somebody needs to figure that out.
There you go.
That kid is the actual witness. So they need to find him, and they need to get him to say what he saw. Obviously, he left that phone on for a reason.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Well, I know when I get the chance to listen to the tape, we are going to go forward with this and write a story about the incident for blackathlete.com. And we'll also put it out on social media on our Soul Tree page. And we intend to follow this as well as pass this on to Gary Show, the Great Leopard Cove. And we're going to make sure that they get the thorough talking about and talking to. And hopefully Shantae will be gracious enough to, and I know she's got a lot on her plate and stuff like that, and I appreciate the fact that we had a chance to talk to her briefly on your show, that she'll come on our show and speak further so that I can go back over some of the quotes that she made so that we can write a forceful piece. And I will contact Fremont so that I can get their side of the story. And if they don't answer, sat on their ass. But that's how we do things here. We're not looking for a gotcha moment, but we do want to understand what would make them think that it was all right for them to beat on this kid like they did, knowing that the kid's got gay parents and think they'd get away with it. That's the $64 question. And I know there's a lot more after that, but it becomes pointless when you realize they jumped on this kid because he had two moms. That's the long and short of it.
But, you know, when you look at situations like this, what business is it of yours?
Exactly.
What goes on in my house?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's been one of my gripes. You know, whether I'm in favor of the whole gay thing or not, that's irrelevant. It ain't your house.
That's right.
This is a public school. I mean, I've had this argument with folks of all persuasions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at some point in time, something's just ain't your business.
Yeah.
Who you do, who and what you do is your business. You know, keep it to yourself. And apparently they were trying to keep it to themselves.
Exactly.
And even if they were open with it, it ain't your business. Is it bother, you know, are they after you? No. So what, you know, what's your gripe with these people? Or what is it about them that make you so insecure that you feel that you got to attack them?
We're
back to those poor black folks back in the day who made white folks so uncomfortable that they had to put a law in the book that said it's illegal for black folks to look white folks in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So I got to put you down to make myself feel good. I got to put you down through legal means to build myself up because the reality is, I really feel like I'm a piece of crap.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. You can walk around, you know, and do whatever it is you do, and you can feel good. You know, you can sing them hymns and spiritism and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and you think God is protecting you, so I'm going to show up God. No, that's not, I mean, we were not put here for that. And this young man, I hope he can find a lawyer. Was upset because he obviously did not have one.
Mm-hmm. No,
he really didn't. No, he didn't. You know, our thing out here is just to get him in jail and get him in the system as quick as you can. I mean, you know, California. You know, and this kid is now he's at that PTSD point. You know, now you got to go back into that situation. You know, who are you now as a person? This has happened to you. This has been videoed, and it's been put on Facebook. So now it embarrassed you in front of everybody. Who are you now as a person? And what the hell is the school district going to do to help this kid mentally go forward and try to become somebody productive? It just doesn't make sense.
Well, at this point, most likely the school system is out of the picture simply because, in their eyes, he's a convicted criminal. You know, and I'm sitting here thinking, remember maybe a month or so ago, a couple of months, within the last couple of months, the story they showed on 60 Minutes about the young man who was accused of raping this young lady?
Yes.
And he got her on tape saying he didn't do it.
That's right.
And, you know, what do they say? Well, we're afraid of, you know, I was afraid my mama going to have to pay the money back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that was the young man who ended got signed by. Didn't he get signed by Carolina? The brother from
he was signed
Atlanta. That's right, the Falcons got him.
He went to Atlanta and I think initially, and then he went to Seattle.
It was the other way around. He went to Seattle first, and then Atlanta claimed him. So yeah, he's in the Falcons camp now. So God bless him, but. I know what you mean.
But see, either way you look at that, you know, here's somebody who, over a jacked up legal system, has literally, you know, she's worried about the money her mom might have to pay back. But I'm sitting there thinking, okay, this guy with the limited, you know, being out of football all this long time, he's still good enough. Almost to make the pros, so you can imagine how good he could have been had he been allowed to go. And, you know, and this is one of those penny wise, dollar foolish situation because if mom had really wanted money, she should have waited till you know the school system paid her off, and he gets screwed. But at the same time. You know, how much money could he have made had he been allowed to go, you know, let things run its course, you know, and who knows how much, I mean, if Dale can get whatever he's getting, I'm sure this young man could have made at least as much.
You know, it begs the question now that you brought it up. What happened to the woman after she was busted for lying about him raping her? That's the other question. You know, I mean, we've had situations where people have cried wolf before. I mean, going back as far as the Scottsboro boys. Now, clearly, the woman had to be black and whatnot because, you know, they would have made an issue of the color right off the bat. But having said that, do you go and prosecute her? I mean, I think deservedly her ass belongs in jail for lying like that and ruining somebody's life. You know, even in a civil suit, they know they can't get any money off of her. But what happened to her? I don't remember anything happening to her in this. You know,
as far as I know, to date, nothing has happened to her. There was some. I think the DA pretty much sort of said, okay, we do need to look at this, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and remember now the same office that came and said, okay, we dropped the charges. Where are the charges against these two heifers? Because both of them went on this together, realistically.
Most definitely.
Somewhere, accessory to and after the fact or something along those lines has to be. I mean, I can't see them letting her slide like that.
I would hope not.
That's beyond belief.
It definitely sets a dangerous precedent, but as we want to wrap this up for now, before we get on this, Rhonda, please send me the tape of that.
I definitely will.
So we can go further with this, because this is just scratching the surface. There's too many other unanswered questions between the curious actions of the school, the coach, the court system, and if there's any way they're going to try to find a way to treat this young man as an adult and try to try him as an adult. We just had a situation where a young man who was on death row in Mississippi, thanks to people out in cyberspace, had his stay of execution because people realized there's something very humanely and rather inhumane about not only how the approach the state took, but that they would try to deny him a DNA test, knowing that DNA has cleared thousands of prisoners or thousands of convicted people, and they didn't want to give this young man a DNA test. They wanted to fry his black ass. And enough people spoke up and said, wait a minute, y'all can't get away with this. And at least granted a stay so that they could go further and get further information to hopefully clear him or verify that he was the one who did it. But the point would be, if he's in jail or she's in jail, what the fuck is your hurry? You know, why would you want to continue to expedite executing the person if there's any doubt at all? Because you surely can't say my bad after you've thrown the switch. I mean, you can, but you get the point. The damage is already done. And since we started the show talking about control and the issue of stifling people's joy, I've got to bring this subject up again, and this happens to do with excessive celebration. It has, and this one comes out of Texas, the Columbus High boys 4x100 meter relay team was disqualified after Derek Hayes, who ran anchor, pointed upward as he crossed the finish line first by about 7 yards. His father, Casey Hayes, believes his son was giving thanks in a gesture to God. He put his hand by his ear and just pointed at the heavens, according to the father. Now, the University Interscholastic League deemed this innocuous gesture a violation of excessive celebration and disqualified the entire relay team, which as a result prevents those four boys from advancing to the state meet later this month. Now, I ran track long, 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 long ago in high school. And we've definitely got our ass whipped a few times. And the times we won, we reveled in the celebration of winning. He's pointing upward. We've seen guys pointing skyward. We've seen Tebowing become a whole phenomenon. And now they're going to disqualify these kids because they're in high school and deny them the state championship. And yes, and oh, by the way, the relay team's black. So, Rhonda, you first. I mean, what kind of logic are you going to give me to tell me that they did something wrong here?
The logic, but I can't even figure out the logic behind that. I'm trying to understand how these institutions actually feel about their athletes and the actual people that they deal with. I mean, give me a minute on that one, because that's an entire track team we're talking about? Are we talking about individuals within the
relay team. They beat everybody, and they were qualifying, I guess, in their district for the state championships. And they won decisively. I mean, and the kid points his finger in the air. Now, if they had raised their arms crossing the stripe like people traditionally do, would they have said something then? You know, this is selective, and it's bullying, again, in my mind. Fred,
yeah,
I go back to you. I know districts set codes of conduct sometimes when it comes to athletics, you know, but a pointing of a finger, it's not like he gave him the middle finger. He was past everybody. He crossed the line. You know, how could anybody justify that as being an overzealous celebration?
You can't be happy anymore, apparently, in life.
This sounds like a bunch of. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Now this sounds like another one of those cases of a bunch of old fat white men, who got those usual control issues, who are out there trying to keep the colored boys from showing up the white boys, when the colored boys kick off in their behind and something that they normally kick off their behind in. You know, it's just like, now last year when all this big hoopla about the young man on the blades and all this kind of stuff. He had the Olympic team. Now, if in my humble opinion, if you are in the Olympics and you run in groups of eight, hey, if I finish number eight, which means basically I'm in the top eight in the world.
Exactly. I'd be celebrating that. It's like, that's not bad.
Think about it now. You know a little bit about track and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How many guys at the high school level, then on up to the college and right on up into the professional levels and sort of thing. How many guys out there running the 400 meters?
Exactly.
A whole butthole full of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, googles, millions and millions or whatever. Hey, count it like you want to.
Exactly.
So,
I always love googles. Go ahead.
if you go back and look at, you just go out there and just take a minute and think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the state of Texas where track is just short of godly. So if you're out there, you're running, you know, and my question to them would be, if you're not going to celebrate, why are you running?
There you go. Exactly.
Now, this sounds like some of these old rules made up by a bunch of old white folk who trying to keep the color folks from showing them up. Because I can remember when we first started playing white schools, we were told that, you all can't win, but, you know, we can play a good game, all this kind of stuff.
That's right.
And, you know, back then, well, what's your offense? Well, we run the McClendon system. Well, what's that? We're going to press you and run your ass out of here. and this is kind of how it went. When we first started playing white schools, we would smoke you. I mean, you know, we wouldn't even bother going to, I mean, if you were checking, especially if you were checking their best player, they weren't that big on taunting as they are now. But if you were checking their best player, you may not even go to the huddle during a timeout unless referee told you to go to the huddle.
Yeah.
And usually on our home floor, they didn't say nothing because the black referees knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But see, if you they did a special on ESPN a while back about the Pony Express out of Durham.
That's right.
These guys average 100 plus points in a 32-minute game.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they had won like 32, 33 games and got to the finals. And the team that they had beaten, they come from behind 19 points the year before and won by 2 in overtime. Came back, and they were averaging 100 plus a game in 32 minutes.
Mm.
They had no overtime game because nobody was there.
32 minutes, my God.
Yes. Mm. Four 8-minute quarters, they were putting up 100 points.
Wow.
Well, they played against a gentleman who had played under Coach McClendon, who understood the strengths as well as the weaknesses.
Yep.
And then, you know, they also decided to have a bad night that night, too.
Mm-hmm.
So either way you look at it, the Pony Express got derailed in the state final, so they knocked them out of back-to-back state championships. And they won one or two since, and I think they won the football because one few black schools that survived the purge of the late 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, you run these races because you want to win.
That's right.
And I'm not a rah-rah type guy, kind of guy, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for those who are into that, you know, what harm have you done when you celebrate? I mean,
exactly.
Okay, if what they did is wrong, then what is acceptable celebration? Because, you know, I come from a school, and Reggie can verify this, where you know they stomp and shake when we win.
Mm-hmm.
Cheerleaders. So you're telling us that we can't even have our cheerleaders.
Exactly.
In his case, we can't have the woo woo. So you know, what is the? I mean, and then. This falls into a category of things that's flat out too stupid to have been done by adults. But I know, adults who came together and did these young men in. So, it's ridiculous.
Well, here to everything that you just said, the response by the father, as I go further in this, clearly touches on where we started. And talking about the university and the Scholastic League deeming this a violation of its excessive celebration rule, the UIL's ruling is also being viewed as a violation of religious freedom to some people who complained to the state, but it fell on deaf ears. And as the father, Mr. Hayes, of this young man said, and this is his quote, "You cross a finish line and you've accomplished the goal, and within seconds, it's gone." To see four kids, you know, what does that tell them about the rest of their lives? That goes exactly to the point I was making. You're going to do what's right, work extra hard, and have it ripped away from you? And while this technically might be a violation, you know, clearly they're missing the spirit of this, because let's say that kid had pulled out a Bible after he crossed the finish line and sat down in the dirt and said, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want," et cetera, et cetera, then would they have said something? You know? And the color thing we can't get away from, because if there had been a white kid crossing the finish line, would they have said something? If he had Tebowed, knowing that this thing had become somewhat of a fad, Rhonda, if he had Tebowed and genuflected and all that crap after he came over in the same manner, would they have fined him, knowing what kind of attention that got from the media?
I don't think so. Because once you put the media on there, you know what, that's what everybody craves. So, yeah, mm-hmm. that would get some attention. Of course they're not going to give that. Bring it on. You know,
mm-hmm.
that everybody's media hungry right now. Look at the stuff that people are doing just to be in the media. So, of course, if he does something Tebow-ish, that or genuflex or something like
mm-hmm.
that, and the media is there, of course it's going to get attention for them, and it's going to be or what they think is positive. They're not going to say anything.
And
I don't even understand how this is a problem. See, this is what I don't understand with mainstream sports. There's so many little interest. I mean, you get on the wave, you're on the wave. You fall off the wave, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many little intricate details that go into mainstream sports, and it almost seems like it's the rules start individually. It's not like a whole league thing. It just starts one place, and okay, I think that's what we should start doing right now.
No, that's exactly right.
Instead of putting in policies that actually make sense or don't make sense,
mm-hmm.
it's just like, let's just fly by the seat of our pants kind of thing.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head, because being on a surfboard, definitely you're on your own, unless you're tandem surfing, and I don't think that happens very often. So you are talking about individual efforts as opposed to team situations here. But
right.
as I throw Cowboy Reggie in the mix here, you know, I think Brother Man hit it on the head. What are you telling these kids that when you achieve at a certain point, you know, it won't matter? We're
mm-hmm.
trying to make sure that you know very early in life that in this system, you don't matter. You know, we don't care about your black ass. If you're not doing anything that benefits us, we could give a shit. So you either celebrate the way we want you to celebrate, you do everything the way we want you to do it, or you're considered a liability because you're either a nonconformist or spawn of the devil or whatever kind of translation you want to make, because if they had said Hail Satan when they crossed that finish line, what were they going to say then?
Well, see, this is my issue, Mike. I'm sure people know down in Jacksonville, Florida, you have a lawyer that's already started a petition to try to get Tebow in, and they're talking about having this money against this
mm-hmm.
religious thing. And then to back it up, they're trying to get President Obama to basically make the Jacksonville Jaguars go ahead and get him in. But Ronnie can back me up. When you have young people stand there and talk about they're pulling their network in mouth because we're not getting no love here, and you got high school students. See, I mean, as Dr. Witt told me, they are the biggest gangsters in Dillinger.
They said, we're going to go ahead and infiltrate these young people. We're going to go ahead and, through the high school level, we're going to cheese them, put them on TV, and now you let the cat out of the bag. I mean, Dr. Wicked, can you back me up on that, what we talked about before?
Well, Fred, before you jump in there, let's also make this point. You know, this is the kind of story where you would think any news organization, sports or not, would put it out there and say, you know, how preposterous is this? You know, you would have thought that the mouse, as Reggie just put it, would have jumped on a story like this. You know, but clearly they're not about trying to do real news or put real news out there. You know, you had four lives destroyed by the whims of some old white fart or some old fart. I could give a shit if he's a white fart or a black fart. To respond the way he did, he's a fart. And that he would do something like this, or they would do something like this collectively, and deprive these kids, is not like they were on steroids or performance-enhancing substances. They won, and you're penalizing them for winning. It reminds me of the thing that was said after the election was stolen when was it Bush who said, just because you get all the votes don't mean you win? It's like, it's fucked up, but it sounds like that. And when these kids get hit with that, they feel the impact of that.
Well, not just that, Mike. You got a situation here where you got kids who work, and this whole you can't celebrate. Okay. You can't put your hand up. You can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch probably more television stuff than, you know. So you hit a home run. What was it, yesterday, today?
Yep.
That's when the Atlanta Braves hit a home run.
Mm-hmm.
So he's supposed to run back, run around, touch all the bases. He can't hold his hand up. He can't wave at nobody in the stands. So how do you celebrate?
Exactly.
And if this, just sitting here thinking, if it were me and I was in Texas and like I have a nephew who ran track in Texas, and I know how cracked up it can be down there.
Mm-hmm.
Track is as bad as football when it comes to corruption.
Yeah.
And having said that, I will be looking at some of these old farts' bank accounts.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
Remember my statement about if you want to fix a ball game, football or basketball,
who do you pay off? Yeah.
You don't pay off the players, you pay off the referees.
That's right.
You know, I'm watching, you know, I'm watching a baseball game, and let's see this guy supposedly, you know, go around, but his bat is back, so, you know, and basically once his hands never crossed the plate.
Right.
And the bat was all the way back.
Mm-hmm.
They still said he swung. Even after he got ejected, he was still claiming. And I'm thinking, why is this? And there were several other questionable calls. It was a double where the ball obviously hit above the line. And, you know, in baseball, when you hit on the line, it's either home run or
fair. Right.
Yeah. In football and basketball, you know, and I'll say this too, because if you notice any sport where white folks rule, there's so many fine, so many fuzzy lines.
Mm-hmm.
What's the accurate size of a golf course? What's the size of a baseball field? There's no 53.5 feet, 94.5 feet. There's no 120 yards by 54 yards. No, it's whatever.
Yep.
It can be 250 down the line, or it can be 350 down the line. It can be 450 straight away, whatever straight away.
Mm-hmm.
And see, these are the kind of parameters, control parameters that are out there a lot of times, and our kids are put in these positions like this, always something that is inherently subjective. Was it, you know, was his foot on the line? Well, we don't have, you know, we can go look at his tape, but, you know, we know you got to, you know, if you prove it on tape, well, hey, we'll go back and we'll split tip, no problem. But then you watch the same referee in other instances, and you come up with a whole lot of phony baloney kind of stuff, and you find that same kind of stuff going on. And, you know, if these black kids have been taunting or whatever, I could see it.
Mm-hmm.
You do that with anybody.
Yep.
If they were still in the first on the first leg, where you got to maintain your lane.
Right.
If they're across to the outside or inside, I mean, across to the inside, I could see it.
Exactly.
But this, you know, this is utter nonsense right here, because you're punishing kids for doing what you which is really what is prescribed, you know. And I think, you know, if you tell the kids ahead of time, this is what, you know, these are the rules, you can't change it at the end.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, Cowboy, as we put a blanket on this, Fred brought it up, and that's the whole issue of officials. And we know Texas high school sports is more than just, you know, intramural here and all of that nonsense. This is big business down there. You know, we already know their football apparatus by itself probably rivals some NFL franchises in the, you know, setup and everything of how they set up their – well, actually, I would say NFL, I'll say NCAA. They don't probably make that much money. But the whole system of how everything sets up down there, how important athletics are down there to the revenue streams of a lot of these little towns, it is a big deal. Officials do have say. And who knows what other things were behind all of this, because clearly it's a big difference than crossing the finish line and saying hark hallelujah and start speaking in tongues and doing the boogaloo and breakdancing and shit, as opposed to just pointing up one finger by your ear in celebration as you cross a finish line.
Well, see, again, Mike, the sad thing about it, that ESPN, the mouse, and again, I'll say again, are the biggest gangsters, are the biggest pimps out there, because they nurture our young. That 30-30 series they did, how about down the day in Miami when the Little League football, you had the youth men bet on when they was like, I think, 9, 10, 11 years old. One kid was so enthralled in playing Little League football that he screwed up his junior, middle college career. Well, when he got to ninth grade, he couldn't even play because his grades were too bad. And I was on 30-30 on the mound.
Yeah.
So if they are infiltrating Little League and making big bets and everything, what do you think they're doing down there in Texas? And I heard in North Carolina they got some bad stadiums down there that rival some colleges. I mean, come on. I mean, it's big business, right? I mean, in high school, it's crazy. You know, we see the version of the different, what was that, the high school thing that came on TV? They did a high school the TV series about it. Now, that's gangster high school. And LeBron James were playing. Who was getting that money? They didn't. They ride around limos and everything. Can you help a brother out? Who's getting that money?
Well, that's always going to be the $64 question. But unfortunately, all them dollars are already accounted for because the gangsters are going to make sure that nobody else gets them. And in that spirit, we have to sidebar for a couple of quick ones before we get into final thoughts. Now, you brought up the Tim Tebow madness, and I'm really tired of talking about this fool, but
I know
the only reason this needs to be brought up is because of the length of time they have bent over backwards. Never in my life have I ever seen a third-string quarterback. Y'all didn't hear me. Let me say that again. A third-string quarterback garner so much attention for doing nothing. You know, he's basically told the world, I'm white and I'm going to be a quarterback. Never mind that I can't fucking throw an intermediate pattern. Never mind that, you know, even when I throw deep, I'm hoping that my receiver bails me out because I'm not the most accurate thrower in the world. You know,
yep.
I'm white. I deserve to be a quarterback. And not in the CFL, but in the NFL. But in a moment of light, Warren Moon, bless him, who I think humbly is the best quarterback that ever played, that these eyes have ever seen, said straight up, he can't make it in the CFL. And I knew why. Because
yeah.
you have to be efficient in throwing those intermediate routes. Those are the lifeblood of the CFL. I mean, in the CFL, you got brothers who can flick it 75, 80 yards without even thinking about it. And that's no joke. If you're going to throw out patterns in the CFL, they're going to be at least another 13 yards wider as you come out to the sideline. So you're going to have an arm. And even if you have an arm, you better damn well be accurate with that arm. Or if you're not, you better be able to find the holes between the seams like Doug Flutie and Jeff Garcia did when they played in the CFL, which made up for their lack of serious arm strength. Tebow can't do any of that shit. And even though Warren Moon didn't say it quite that way, that's essentially what he was saying. You know, so you couldn't even make it in the CFL even if they wanted you up there. And even the CFL team that owns his rights, the Montreal Alouettes, said, well, you know what, if you come up here, you got to grab some bench anyway because we only have the all-time thrower in the CFL in Anthony Calvillo as our starting quarterback. And behind him, we got somebody who's already got 2 or 3 years indoctrinated in the system, so we already know what the deal is. So we're good to go. So as we spin all of this out, this Tebow thing, and to your point about the lawyer, he made erroneous statements right off the bat. The thing that he said that was most erroneous was that Tebow led his team to 2 national championships. And I know if a certain colleague of mine would say he cried shenanigans, this is Sultry Ray in a row. I say that's bullshit. He got 1 championship because of the talented people around him. Chris Leak was responsible for that championship. Chris Leak started that championship game. Chris Leak drove the team 80 and 90 yards down the damn field so that Tebow could come on and steal his time and get the touchdown, and all of a sudden, he's God. And Urban Meyer needs to be bitch slapped for perpetuating that madness and making people think that it was Tebow who won them that championship. To my knowledge, I have never heard him say anything positive or, frankly, anything at all about Chris Leak, Reggie. Nothing.
Hey, that's a fact.
And, you know, any player that's going to get you a championship, if you're a coach or a coordinator, do you think you're going to remember that person fondly? Do you think you're going to think that kid played well for you? They don't say shit about Chris Leak.
Hey, white privilege.
No, it's more than that, but I digress. You know, Fred, I know you're tired of Tebow too, but when you see how hard they're trying to keep him in the league to play the position that he says he wants to play, now we've seen black quarterbacks be forced to play other positions, and we've actually seen some white quarterbacks decide, you know what, I don't give a shit, I'll get in where I fit in. If I need to play cornerback or some other position because I am a decent athlete, yeah, why not? You know, I'm in the NFL. Nobody is saying at any point in time that Tim Tebow couldn't make it as a tight end or H-back. He probably could. He's big enough, strong enough. But this inference that he must play quarterback, I'm surprised that the NFL hasn't tried to nip this shit in the bud. Or is this just him tweaking the fantasies of a lot of these owners who want to be Timmy Tebow?
Well, let me say this up front. There was certain prejudice on my part towards Chris Leak because Curtis Leak Sr. was my freshman year classmate.
You're kidding.
No. He got caught up in a situation where we had about 10 freshman receivers, and he was a step slow, I'll say.
Okay.
Plus smart enough to go to another school back home, and he ended up going to back to Charlotte and John D. Smith, and years later he came up with CJ and then Chris. But, you know, Tebow is one of those kids that come along ever so often. I admire thoroughly his Christian walk and all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, he ain't got nothing to do with football.
Exactly.
You know, if you can't run it, you can't throw it. That's what football is all about. Now, if he was, say, had the capacity to do some of the things that, say, a Peyton Manning could do,
mm-hmm.
I could kind of go along with the program with that, but he ain't got all that.
Mm-hmm.
And see, even now, if you look at what Peyton Manning's on the field situation,
yeah,
it was good. But once he was off the field and they had to turn that over to somebody else, you see how jacked up that team was?
Oh, yeah.
So I don't see nobody else going that way, making those radical kind of changes. But the other thing I see, and this is where the white folks are really in denial. Football, as it has been played with the drop-back quarterback and all that kind of good stuff,
mm-hmm.
games are numbered.
Yep.
If
and they know it.
You know, and I'll reiterate this. Remember the guy who plays for some school at the South, what used to be the Southwest Conference?
Right.
Texas A&M,
mm-hmm.
freshman white boy.
Yep. Johnny Manziel.
Black coach.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now he runs that seam, some version of the seams.
Exactly. That's right.
So now we know white boys can run that.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need for Tebow and these dropback boys.
That's right.
And Tebow got an arm that's softer than mine, so I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
He cut it.
Well,
when it comes to his Christian walk, I have no qualms about anything, all that kind of stuff. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
His place. But it ain't got nothing to do with football.
There it is. And we talking about football. We ain't talking about nothing else. And as we always say, best man plays. If you ain't the best man, you don't play. Grab some bench and be humble and wait for your moment to come. And if you get it, hooray for you. But, you know, as we come into our final thoughts here, you know, I find that this has been part of a really nagging trend. I was doing some looking up while we were all talking, and apparently this whole thing about putting kids in chains or in handcuffs, there's a pattern to this. Apparently, and ironically, it's starting with black girls. About 51% of kids who were detained were black and female. Of that group, over 65% of them were under the age of 9. Now think about that. Think about the mindset of a 9-year-old kid in handcuffs,
uh-huh.
waiting for a principal or a parent to either chastise or do whatever. There's something very fucked up about this. It's creating a mindset that leads to what Mr. Perry talked about regarding his kid. They achieve positive things, and for what? What kind of effect does having their joy or their achievement stolen from them because they don't fall in line with a behavior paradigm is part of a bigger problem? And we know that kids are being sent to jail for bullshit reasons. Many of them are being sent for bullshit reasons. We know about Pennsylvania and how they were selling kids literally jail sentences to have them make a couple of judges a whole bunch of money. Who's to say that, while it may not be that radically done in Pennsylvania, this stuff's not being part of a pattern that's going to be perpetuated across the country? Let's not forget, the Corrections Corporation of America made $675 million last quarter by guaranteeing that there were going to be filled beds in prisons in at least 20 states and the District of Columbia. This is something that we cannot ignore, and it's definitely more food for thought as we go further. But now I want to get the final thoughts. And first of all, let me just say thank you to everybody who took time to get on the air tonight as we were having to adjust with our late hour. We'll be back on our normal time next Wednesday, and again Saturday we will pick up the discourse on this. But first of all, Rhonda, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
All right, darling. It's time for you. It is time for your last licks. Anything you want to say and your shameless plug, if you will.
Okay, first of all, Santa Clara County, y'all have got to get this whole situation together with this racism situation in the school. This is not the first time. This is not the second time. This is the third time I've had to deal with this in the last 30 days. That means that there's a serious problem out here, and it needs to be addressed. And this is why I started to go on the radio. Shameless plug. Well, I'm going to continue this conversation tomorrow on Thought Provoking Thursday on my show, One Love Radio, at 12 p.m. You can catch me here on Block Talk Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, thank you so much for helping me get the word out.
Thank you.
I'm going to send you the video right now so you have it.
Okay.
And Shay texted me while we were talking, and she said that she's sorry that she couldn't make it, but the police are over there taking another report, and the lady that's over there is helping her son. So we do
no
have
problem.
Progress. So I will keep you all abreast of what's going on.
All right. I will come on Thursday, and if nothing else, just to listen in to see how things go on. Again, that's One Love Radio. It is on 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific time. Go check out Rhonda. She's been doing this for a long time, and I am so proud of the fact that she, like all of us, understand that we've got other things that are going on that are much bigger than talking through a couple of airwave lines here. And having said that, Cowboy Reggie, time for your last licks and your shameless plug.
Well, first of all, I got to shout out to my baby Rhonda for giving me love on the Facebook, on the award I received from looking out for the high school. So much love to you, Rhonda. Thank you for your love, my queen. I appreciate
much,
it.
Much respect.
Thank you. You know, I got to double dip real quick. It's kind of ironic that you have some rednecks that want to march on Washington with loaded pistols and rifles.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm happy that they've already told them, once you get across that bridge, you're going to be met with force. So right now, 2,500 claim they got the balls to walk up on that in D.C. where you're not allowed to have a pistol. So this is one time that I'm hoping that some, you know, Nazi Confederate-wearing clowns that think they're so big and bad, you see how bad they are when they get in their ass. So I'm just going to pop that side note. But with the situation happening in Cleveland, and a lot of people now are making money off this young man who's a hero.
Mm-hmm.
But the sad thing, we see the same type of trash from our neighborhood when Negroes want to holler about how the man talks, how his hair looks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this man just rescued three people when
Thank
other
you.
People were
Thank
just
you.
Looking
Thank
around.
You
and now they want to make T-shirts after him. They want to go on YouTube and mock him. And again, my question to the media out there, that had been your daughter that would have been locked up. You wouldn't
Thank
be standing
you.
Right here cracking on him. You'd have been applauding this man. And then when the man stands there and try to talk to the 911, if you listen to the two different 911, again, I understand they have a job. I know they get thousands and thousands of calls. But my thing was, the brother might have that good old, you know, city dialect, but he was trying to let the man know.
Exactly.
And then when the young lady got on there, you heard a different tone. And here's a little sidebar to that. When the reporter asked him at the end, and when he said, when I saw a white, pretty girl come at a black man, then he hurried up and tried to cut that interview short. You know, somebody was in the ear like, okay, that's it. It tells a lot to race relationship and what's going on. Hey, all I'm got to say is sports talk every Saturday with the Professor Tony Cobb, the Hall of Fame Coach Lou Anderson, G-Man Glenn Brown, and some guy named Cowboy Reggie at www.wcmradio.com every Saturday from 12 to 1. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. And you know what? I brought this up on Ron's show this afternoon. You know, they're assaulting this man's character, and all he did was save lives. You know, I bet you them three girls don't give a fuck about what he looked like or how he sounded. You know,
and the families,
exactly, and then they really got stupid because they wanted to blame Sylvia Brown. And for those who don't know, Sylvia Brown is a renowned psychic who apparently had told one of the families that their daughter had died a few years ago and all of that. So instead of being happy that Sylvia was actually wrong in this case and these girls were alive, they're going to try to shit on her because, well, you know, you didn't get your prediction right. Hello? That's like the weatherman saying it's going to be sunny tomorrow and it rains almost half the day. Are you out of your mind?
Yep.
You know, and never mind, we have to stop this whole madness about trying to appease white people. There's nothing wrong with speaking English properly. There surely is nothing wrong with carrying yourself with a certain level of deportment. But if you are who you are, and I saw more humanity in this man doing what he did than all the assholes who are trying to make fun of him or pimp off of him. When he talked about the reward, what did he say? Well, give it to
the girls. Give it to the victims.
Give it to the victims. They needed more than I do. You know, this was a true hero here. And they're doing that too. Exactly, and now they're going to try to shit on him and try to go to some low-denominated caricature and whatnot. This was a strong black man who did the right thing, and that's what needs to be recognized. I don't give a shit what he sounds like or what he looks like. Look at what he did. Judge one by your actions, not by what they say. And with that, I didn't mean to get on the soapbox, but I'm sidebarring to Fred and Professor, as always. Thank you. Time for your last licks and your shameless plug, please.
Well, again, this is another one of those situations where we got to tell our own stories. We got to talk about our own people. And, you know, this young man did something that the police couldn't do because
as we go
through this, we're finding that the police have been to the house several times. And not to mention the time that they were called and never showed up with questions about this house. So, you know, maybe God sent this man to these young ladies to get them out of this situation because
they
were the ones who were so supposed to have been doing the job, but it's apparent they didn't do their job. And, you know, when we look at this big picture, and one other thing, I haven't gotten all the details yet, but I was there was some list that has come out, and it was talking about how some of our colleges, specifically some HBCUs, are not worth the money.
Yep.
I'll be looking into this a little closer tomorrow.
Please do.
Because you know where my heart is on that.
If you find anything, Fred, we need to pick up on that and bring that up on Saturday's show.
I'll be working on it tomorrow as soon as I go see my brother and get on his nerves for a little bit. He's recovering from some major stuff, but hey, he's 80 and still kicking. So
there you go.
Well, almost 80. But you know, one of the schools that they talk about is Shaw University, and having just finished writing the history of their sports, I can tell you that Shaw University, there's a lot more to Shaw. Like there's a lot more to all HBCUs. There's a lot we really need to be proud of because, if nothing else, women's basketball practically grew up on their campus. So I'll leave it at that. But my shameless plug is you can get the book about Shaw as well as this Black College Sports Encyclopedia and anything else that we sell at www.blackheritagereview.com. Just blackheritagereview.com. And I'll talk to you Saturday.
All right, brother. Thank you as always. And thank you to my staff of chefs for providing some good food for thought as always tonight. Ironically, I was going to go in another direction, but I do want to throw a programming note in. Again, our brother Gary Norris Gray is a little bit under the weather and whatnot. We want to send some love and healthy vibes to Gary and whatnot so he can handle his business as he always does Saturday on the Great Leopard Cove, which is on 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. on the West Coast. He may be throwing stuff at the TV because I know he's watching the hockey playoffs, but just get well, Gary, and whatnot, and we will link up as always. But another programming note, I will hopefully in the next couple weeks be ready to present my first book. It's called Imitation and Life, and it is a book of essays. It touches on current events, and, well, I hope you might find it entertaining. It might be worth a purchase yourself. So I'll give you more information on that as we go, but again, Fred lit the fire for this last statement, and it had to do with the fact when he talked about how, you know, the schools are screaming for touchdowns and there's no decibel requirement, you know, there. You can scream till you got no voice as long as he gets that little ball over that little white line for the home team. But when you're achieving a true goal, like graduating, you know, or things like that, you're muted. It brought to mind, as Reggie recalled, what happened with the brother who helped get those girls freed in Cleveland, Bill Maher, who is the host of his own HBO show and is somebody who I like and hate at the same time, made a statement that I think sums everything up. He said, if President Obama can call a bunch of guys who just finished dribbling a basketball, surely he could spend a couple of minutes on the phone with this young man, because he's a real hero. You see proof that he saved lives in his actions. And all we see sometimes when sports teams get their Kodak moment is, yes, the achievement has been made, but other than that group of people, who does it really affect? A city that claims false pride for a team that, you know, well, that's our, those are our guys. This man is from Cleveland, and he represented Cleveland better than its police force, than its elected officials, because he did what people used to do in neighborhoods everywhere across America. He looked out for his neighbor. And when something wasn't right, he said something. He did what countless generations before him did. So in that spirit, I know the ancestors were favorable upon him. And as Fred said, angels do turn up in the most intriguing places. We'll see you Saturday in our Saturday edition of the show. For myself, for Queen Extreme Rhonda Harper, for Cowboy Reggie, for Professor Fred, and all the rest of the Soul Tree staff that's on assignment, kitchen's closed. We're out.
BlackAthlete.com.
Now we got the spirit that can never give in, with a heart that pumps stronger than 10 average men. It's something within, I was born to win. You can't hold me down, I'm a black champion. We had to fight for equal rights, on and off the court, and at the turn of the century, dominated sports for the love of the game. Endured the pain and fought through segregation, had to make a change. Jackie Robinson, first black man to get a deal in the major league, knocking home runs out the field. Led the whole lead in RBIs and steals in his first year, MVP rookie of the year. Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, and Minnie Minosa paved the way for Reggie Jackson, Ken Griffey, and Sammy Sosa. Half of all MVPs in the history of baseball's been black athletes. That's why we excel in all our feats, cause we so deep, mentally, physically, and spiritually. So all I wanna do is thank my God, we worked so hard, came so far, black athletes, superstar.
Light through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory that I can never see. Light through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory that I can never see. Light through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory that I can never see. Light through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory that I can never see.
Now, basketball is my favorite of all sports, cause there's so many black athletes that ever blessed the court. Will Chamberlain must be the most famous, scored 100 points in a game, and no one to do the same as Elgin Baylor, Bill Russell, and Connie Hawkins. Who's the best to play the sport? Dr. J or Michael Jordan? Played above the rim when they scored, hung in the air when they scored, made moves like never before. So all my black athletes, entrepreneurs, you open up the doors, you deserve a round of applause. The pigskin, the gridiron, where bodies be colliding, and the men must be made of iron. Where would football be without the great Jim Brown? Austin Payton breaking tackles and running for touchdowns. So if you ever had to stop him, it'd be crushing, because he still holds the records for the most yards rushing. Smooth with quick moves like dancers, Emmitt Smith, Tyrell Davis, and Ray Barry Sanders. All I want to do is thank my God, who worked so hard, came so far, black athlete, superstar.
Light through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory that I can never see. Light through the eyes
eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
Jack Johnson, a heavyweight champion in 1910, fought the best of American men. And the fourth of the century took place on Independence Day, and the purse was 100 G's to pay. The most eagerly awaited event in American history, Jack Johnson versus Jim Jeffries. Nothing Frederick Douglass ever did, nothing Booker T ever did, shocked the world like this did. The great white hope came tumbling down, beaten and bruised and knocked out in the 15th round. Muhammad Ali, the greatest heavyweight champion of all time, at least was in his mind. He gained the heavyweight championship a record 3 times and successfully defended it 19 times. The third youngest, the third oldest heavyweight champion. His career spanned the 7th president.
The eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
Charlie Stafford, the first black man to win the PGA, made it possible for Tiger Woods to play today. Althea Gibson, first black woman to win the Wimbledon. Arthur Ashe, Williams sisters, we loved them through all of their trials and tribulations. Bad times we faced it and overcame the situation. Jesse Owens won 4 gold medals in the 36 Olympics, breaking records in 3 different events. And all the black women began to dominate. In track and field, they was great in 1948. And a team full of black women won 6 medals and represented in the 52 Olympics. Thanks to William Rudolph and Elise Coachman, black women athletes slash postmen, Flo Jones and Jackie Joyner was terrific in track and field. The best black women that ever did it.
Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
BlackAthlete.com. Yeah.